Good afternoon. This is Edward Marlowe with the For Those Who Inquired podcast.
What if you're listening in the morning?
You can listen whenever,
well, then good morning.
Whenever you want. Good morning, good afternoon, good, perhaps you're even listening at dinner time. Good evening.
Yeah.
Good evening.
Yeah, this is a special called For Those Who Inquired. Anybody that listens to us on a regular basis knows we try to record either on Monday or Tuesday, and this is a midweek recording because lots of stuff has happened or is about to happen.
That's what I hear. And right now, I am in Atlanta getting ready to do the Racer game against Georgia State. No, I'm not.
No.
But I would have been.
You would have been.
But I'm not.
Yeah.
Because that's not happening.
Rest in peace.
But there is football, right. And Austin Peay's already played a game, so anyone who says there will be no games, they were wrong. And there's two games tonight and a slate of games coming up on Saturday, too.
Look at how terrific that first game was. I paid attention.
Good game.
Yeah, absolutely a good game. First play, 75 yards on an option toss.
Yeah.
It's good-looking football.
But it looked like they didn't disclose the names of who was unavailable, but it appeared maybe the long snappers and some of the special teams personnel was unavailable for Austin Peay for whatever reason. And it really showed up for them.
Undisclosed medical reasons.
Exactly.
Still a good game, nonetheless. And we know that there's some frustration in the OVC. You know, for clear reasons. You've got Austin Peay playing football. You have Jacksonville State playing football. You've got Eastern Kentucky. Everybody keeps saying going rogue. I guess officially that's what they did. But
that's what I think they did.
Yeah, but I mean,
I think it's a good move. If they play all their games and get $1 million, here's where it's going to look good. If they do end up canceling the season, mm-hmm. they're going to look like geniuses come spring.
Yep. No, and here's the thing. If they don't cancel the season, well, then they've put the OVC in a mild bind.
Right.
Again, this is all circumspect and you know, pending, you know, how the rest of the season is going to even play out, but I mean, look, good for EKU. You know, I know there's people, let's just localize it here from a Murray State standpoint. Obviously, there's some brooding frustration, I think, that's starting to form about why did we not try to play some football, and I don't know the answers to those questions.
Right.
And that's, you know, but that's okay. I think, I will say this. I think part of the decision to not play football really did come down to schedule, because even though you had some FBS games lined up, you lost Tarleton State when Texas opted to do its thing, when those schools made mm-hmm. those choices. You lost Louisville when the ACC said 10 plus 1. So those are out of Murray State's hands. I'm going to legitimately say that. Like, those games were literally just yanked away. You maybe wanted to play them, but it just didn't happen.
Right.
And then, you know, so on and so forth, here we are. Would it have been difficult to maintain a four-game non-conference schedule? I think you probably could have lined up a few opponents, but it is what it is, and let's just enjoy some football.
Let's do.
Kentucky plays at the end of September, as does, I believe, the University of Louisville starts fairly soon as well. So
we do.
Yeah, so we'll start, you know, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, college football as it motors down, but it's exciting to see some of the FCS playing, and it's a start. You know, if these games work, that's what I have to tell myself. If these games work, and we have limited COVID cases, or perhaps even none in some situations. Some schools are testing, you know, not everybody's Alabama. That bodes well, I think, for the spring.
Yes, yeah. And for basketball, this is kind of a let's see what happens with this. And I know they're different sports.
They are.
But they'll keep an eye on let's see how successful this is. If it's successful, let's move on.
Yeah. So part of the reason that we delayed our podcast for this week was that the National Basketball Association has pending information, and now it's just happened. Former Murray State Racer and point guard Ja Morant is the top rookie in the league.
What? What a shock that is.
Yeah, I would have never believed. Oh, wait.
Yeah, the shock would have been, it's like, no, he's not.
Well, so Ja Morant, NBA Rookie of the Year, just announced by Sham Sharania and Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN. Yes, the man himself. 2 years here at Murray State, 1 year with the Memphis Grizzlies, already considered one of the top players in the league, top 50, 60 players in that conversation. Unbelievable, Neil. He wins the league award over the two other finalists, former AAU teammate and New Orleans Pelican, Zion Williamson. And I will stop here and say that I think if Zion had played the full year, we would have had a tight race.
Yeah,
quite frankly.
Yeah.
You know, the man was a monster, particularly in the paint. Also, the other finalist and the now 2-0 Miami Heat with Kendrick Nunn. Now, Kendrick Nunn's not been particularly good in this Milwaukee Bucks series, but that's okay because everybody else on the team has been really, really good. And now they lead the Defensive Player of the Year and MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo, 2-0 in the bubble.
It's kind of a shock, right?
It's a little bit of a shock. I mean, don't get me wrong, Miami's terrific, but I think everybody shoot, and they may still, you got to win, you know, you got to win four of the next five. So, I mean, that's not impossible for Milwaukee. I mean, they're a terrific NBA team. We've slightly trailed off of Morant here for a split second, but two, both of these guys in Williamson and Nunn, terrific rookies, but Ja at the top. And here's why. There is one key stat that has put him, I think, over the top of everybody else.
Jersey sales?
Jersey sales, absolutely. Yeah, that's
it.
Yeah, that's the rule for Rookie of the Year is whoever sells the most jerseys wins. It's the fact that he averaged 17.8 points per game, 7.3 assists per game. He's one of seven rookies to average 17-7 in the history of the game. Here's the other six. You might know a few of these guys, Niels. This is around your time. Oscar Robertson?
Yeah.
1960-61.
Yes.
Magic Johnson, 1979-80.
Heard of him.
Isaiah Thomas, 1981-82.
Sat across from him at Florida International.
Oh, man. Damon Stoudemire, 95-96, the former famous Portland Trail Blazer, among other things. Allen Iverson, 1996-97, the former Georgetown. Rest in peace, John Thompson.
Saw him in Tallahassee.
And Trae Young, 2018-2019, last season.
Wow. So on my list here, Ja is overrated. I can cross that one out, right?
Yeah, Ja is not overrated.
Wait till he gets against some good players. Can I cross that one out too? That's
mm-hmm.
out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I don't have anything else listed. He basically took care of every question that was answered and improved as the season went on.
Yeah. I know in the bubble he struggled a little bit from three-point percentage those first eight games. I think he went 9-for-40. Just against, you know, some of the top teams in the NBA,
right.
And the three just did not fall for him. And
there's a layoff for a lot of guys.
Yeah, and teams let him take it. He also then he put up 35, a career high 35 against Portland in a do or die situation,
yeah.
and had a chance really. There was a chance there and late in the fourth to win it. A few too many turnovers. He'd probably be the first person to tell you that. But, I mean, he capped his rookie year in one of the most spectacular ways possible. And not only that, had a broken thumb. Fractured.
Yeah.
Fractured thumb.
Yeah.
That he had fractured against the Toronto Raptors. Unbelievable rookie season. Certainly some ups and downs. He wasn't 100% there. You know, lower back injury. You know, missed a few games. But it's unreal to think. He shot 47% from the field. He shot above 70% from the free throw line. He averaged a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. He shot 33.5% from the 3-point line. He had a better rookie year than Derrick Rose did when Derrick Rose won Rookie of the Year. Like, I mean, honestly, they had the same number of rebounds per game. He averaged one full assist more. And he shot 11% better from the three than Derrick Rose did his rookie year. I'm not trying to, like, is he going to be the biggest NBA star in the future? I don't know. He's in at the same time as, like, your Trae Youngs and your Luka Doncic's and stuff like that. But, like, to know that Ja is going to be in the conversation as one of the top, like, young guys in the league for the next 8 to 10 years. It's just awesome.
And
honestly,
we know Ja. He's going to get better because of how hard he works.
Yeah.
He's not going to go, well, as Rookie of the Year, I'm going to quit working. He's not going to do that. He's going to work as hard as he's ever worked. And in a few years, he'll be even better than he is now. I know that's like, well, he can't be that much better. He could be some better because he works hard at it.
It makes you wonder, and I may ask this, has he stopped jumping on tractor tires yet? Is the workout better now, you know?
I'm not sure.
I wonder if he will stick to his roots. It'll be really interesting to see.
Yeah.
The thing about it, and I want to ask you this, Neil. You know, you and I have had a front row seat to him growing until, you know, obviously he went to the Memphis Grizzlies. What is your, there's a ton of moments. What is your favorite moment of his development at Murray State? Was there a specific, like, play or even a full game or even just a moment that you have with John Morant that told you this kid's going to be great someday?
The dunk at Martin was spectacular. And I realize that's just one play, but it just the way he electrified the crowd, not our crowd, their crowd.
Their crowd.
Their crowd. The football team that was there running up and down the steps like it was their player that just did that. They did it again on the replay just as much. Like, that was insane. It was incredible. That was the moment it'll be etched into my mind to the point, and I've told this story many times, I watched the play. I was sitting there courtside and saw it, and I didn't want to tell people that he just jumped over the guy because, like, he didn't. I know he didn't because he couldn't do that.
And
then
did.
Moments later, someone had on Twitter him jumping over the guy. It's like, Kenny, look at this. He actually did it. I just didn't want people to go, he didn't jump over him. Come on, Neil.
Neil's exaggerating.
Come on, you're getting old. You need to retire. Get out of here because he didn't jump over him. You can't do that.
Right.
But he did.
Here's the other thing that I want to talk about that moment, and then I have my own moment as well, and it's fairly obscure. Don't get me wrong, his triple-double in Hartford was unbelievable.
Yes.
But for me, I feel bad for Quentin Dove. I mean, it's basketball.
And he's a good dude. I like Quentin. Good player.
Quentin was a good dude, seemed really humble on the court.
Yeah.
You never saw him really talk a lot of crap.
No.
Great player.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like, I mean, what a steal for those guys. Like, he was terrific.
I liked him.
Does he have another year of eligibility?
I don't think so.
He does, but his 2 years at UT Martin I thought were really, really special, especially on the offensive side of the basketball. But, you know, again, we've digressed. That was just basketball. That was a great dribble pass, you know, from Tevin, and you know, John made the cut. And here's the thing, it's a signature play at the NBA. You talk about, you know, Taylor Jenkins did a little bit of scouting. You know, I mean, it's his job. It's like, well, what was Ja really good at? Oh, he was good at driving baseline and just jumping over guys. That happened a lot in the NBA.
That's right.
So Quentin Dove can't feel so bad now.
That's right.
You know,
see?
I told you guys. Yeah. Quentin Dove just sent out a memo to the rest rest of the NBA. Guys, Quentin Dove let them know, hey, if he can jump over me, he can jump over you.
The funny part is going to be Quentin's kids or grandkids. Did you play against Ja Morant, Daddy?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I averaged.
Tell me a story.
No.
No, I don't want to tell you any stories.
I'll buy you a magazine and we'll leave
right.
it at that.
Let's talk about another player.
Centerfold. You know, I'm here to fly. Boom. Over. Dad, is that you? A baseline? Nope, that's not me. That's another player.
That's right. He did look like me.
Really similar, but we have digressed. I will tell you, this is totally random, and I will tell you when I thought, whoa, this kid has got an extremely bright future. Now, did I know that he was going to do what he's doing right now? No, I'm not a, you know, I can't prognosticate that type of, you know, success that is well on his way. For me, think back, and Neil, bear with me here. Think back to the Middle Tennessee game the first season.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When Ja is a starter, and, you know, all media are talking about it that year as a freshman. You knew Jonathan Stark was the guy. Terrell Miller was the other guy. And you're just like, okay, this freshman point guard, what's he going to do that Jonathan Stark can't? And don't get me wrong, Stark was unbelievable in 2017-18.
Yes,
I mean, just fantastic. Good enough for OVC, you know, player of the year and male athlete of the year. And just an unstoppable stop-and-pop shooter with a great knack for the pass. But early in that game against Middle Tennessee State, there's a missed jumper within the first 4 minutes. If you go back and you look at the box score, you'll see this. And Ja literally just out-jumps Middle Tennessee's forward, which I believe at the moment was Nick King, and he literally just dunks the ball right back. Like, he just comes back off the – he's at the top of the key. He sees the ball come off the rim. It's a missed jump shot either from Jonathan or Terrell. I can't remember who it was. And he literally just – right in front of me, I'm underneath the basket trying to shoot, you know, back in the days when photographers could be there. And he literally just jumps over a 6'7 forward and dunks the ball back in. And this is like his second college basketball. Like Middle Tennessee was like
right.
that. What was that third game that year? Maybe
something like that. Maybe
or first four games, and Ja puts the ball back. And I remember the CFSB Center being like, "Whoa, he wasn't supposed to do that." Like he's right. he's a freshman that's only been playing like 40 minutes in his college basketball career, and he did that. He went on to average 12-6-6 that season as one of the one of the first freshmen, one of only like 11 freshmen in the last 30 years to do that. And
so you're telling me in the last three seasons, the only person to hold Ja Morant under 20 points a game for an entire season was Matt McMahon.
Yeah.
So it's like okay.
Yeah, it was Matt McMahon. Well, and technically the NBA too, I guess, with 17-7. But yeah, it was Matt McMahon. Matt, what are you doing, man? You held him back. We're just kidding. 12-6-6.
Matt will have me. I'll be under the bus in the cargo.
12-6-6, Neil. And that's what we saw freshman year. We saw 20-10 his sophomore year. And then 17-7. Ja Morant, I got this text message the other day. Ja Morant would be a senior on this Murray State men's basketball team right now.
Wow.
He'd be a senior in college. If he had, he just turned 21. If he had just opted to stay, you know, those 2 years in college basketball.
Like some thought, well, why doesn't he just stay?
Yeah, why didn't he stay?
No, I've got millions of reasons why.
Yeah.
But I, if you have to ask that question, I don't need to explain it to you.
You know, millions of reasons certainly helps when you can make $7 or $8 million a year as the number two pick.
And you can't get that back.
No, not at all.
So,
He's already racked up two endorsements, big-time endorsements over the last 2 weeks, including an announcement with Body Armor, which is a big time. That's a big-time announcement for him to become a Body Armor, you know, representative. But, you know, we've talked about Morant a lot.
Wow.
We're going to continue to talk about Morant a lot. But clearly this is big-time news for Murray State men's basketball. Let me ask you another question, and then we'll move toward something else. Morant being named NBA Rookie of the Year, what does that do for Murray State men's basketball recruiting?
Well, it eliminates the question when Matt goes into a player's home and they say, well, I'm looking at the bigger schools because if I come to Murray State, I'm probably not going to make it into the NBA. Well, that's done. But if I make it into the NBA, I probably won't really have a lot of success. Well, that, you can mark that off the list too. I think that but it also does this. Matt has a great relationship with Ja. Hey, you want to talk to Ja? You know, you could get him on the phone. He could come in. There's a lot of good that comes out of that just because Ja has a great relationship with Matt and the program. So it's going to do nothing but help and not hurt. It's already helped. I mean, it gets the racers in the door. They haven't had to have the Murray. Where is that at? Murray who? I don't think they've had it. Anybody they're recruiting, they don't have that question asked.
Not at all.
Anymore.
No.
I don't know if they ever did, but they certainly don't anymore.
No.
It's done.
Yeah, you have to understand, like, it's in Western Kentucky. They play in the OVC. Perennial contenders for a conference title, and now an NBA Rookie of the Year.
Right. And I would have never dreamed that would happen at Murray State. Ever.
No.
It's just stunning.
Never. It absolutely is stunning.
First round pick was a shock enough, and we've had two of those, and then to actually have the NBA Rookie of the Year.
And crazy thing is almost three. I mean, Isaiah was right on that cusp.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take anything away from Isaiah at all. He's had a good journeyman career. It looks like it's probably going to continue. It seems to be he's the healthiest he's been in a while, now playing in Russia. You know, Isaiah was really close to being in that low first round range. You know, I mean, the New York Knicks took Tim Hardaway Jr., which that's panned out fairly well for them. Not
right.
for the New York Knicks, but for Tim Hardaway Jr., who's now at the Dallas Mavericks, with Luka Doncic. He's playing pretty well. But, you know, again, it's one of those things, like, Isaiah's had a good career. He was in that Houston Rockets. Man, just total random here. But Isaiah would look so good in that Houston Rockets offense right now. Mm. That's all they do. They play small ball and shoot threes.
Right.
And they won last night by two when James Harden, get this, blocked Lugans Dort.
Playing D.
Lugans Dort actually went to Arizona State because James Harden had gone to Arizona State. They're friends. Like, they're alumni of Arizona State. And James Harden blocked Lugans Dort, who, by the way, scored 30 points last night. He's one of only three rookies in NBA history to score 30-plus points in a Game 7. joining LeBron James and Kobe Bryant. I'm telling you, man, the NBA is in great hands, and Ja Morant is a pair of those hands.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable to see. Let's stay on the Murray State train here. Anthony Koglinakis. I know Murray State football is not playing right now as Coach Hood and his staff continue to work on what should be a spring-like fall. But Anthony Koglinakis, AK-47, the mid-linebacker himself, does look like he'll probably be lining up a little bit differently this year from a linebacker perspective, but he was named Stats FCS 2020, third-team preseason All-American.
That's a big-time award.
It's a big-time award.
It's probably the top organization, especially when it comes to the preseason awards. They also hand out the postseason awards, but it shows the recognition he has. Over 100 tackles last year for the Racers, led them in tackles, and just has a nose. One of those guys that just has a knack for that football. That's what you want in a linebacker. Makes great reads, great tackling technique, and a well-deserved award for Anthony.
Yeah, it's not like it's the, as you called it, this isn't Bob's All-American team.
No. I like that name, and I put him on there because I like him.
Yeah, Billy Bob, AK-47. You know, the Racers, they have a horse that runs around the track.
There you go.
I mean, if they have a horse around the track, it doesn't get any more All-American than that.
I'm going to get me a guy off that team and put on there.
Yeah. They didn't just randomly pick a guy. Anthony Koglinakis certainly deserved it. People wonder why three teams, why a first team, second team, third team. But the FCS is more than 150 football programs. To make it in the top 100 players as a preseason favorite is pretty spectacular. Anthony in that conversation as one of the top defenders, not just in the OVC, but in the entire FCS.
And before we get complaints about Southern people being dumb, and I thought he should have been on there too.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Koglinakis should have made on the first team is what I kind of thought.
First team, yeah.
It's both.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And, I mean, the real question is, do you park your car in the garage?
And that's Bruno.
Yeah.
That's Bruno's All-America team.
Is that Bruno from Boston or Bruno from Chicago?
I don't know. He's wicked tall, so he's probably from Boston.
Yeah. So yeah, Bob's All-American team. I think Anthony would make that team.
Oh yeah, he'd make that team.
Who is Bob? What's Bob's last name?
Doesn't need a last name. He's like Cher, Madonna. You don't need another name. You're just Bob.
You're just Bob.
That's it.
Bob the All-American. We've gone off the rails, but we wanted to give Anthony Koglinakis there a little bit of a nod. Certainly, there's a lot of anticipation that Murray State football, you know, is going to look a little different in the spring. Football in general is going to look different.
They did. Today, this is Thursday. Today, the committee, whatever the heck they're called, that sets championship dates, they're meeting today. They've had a recommendation that was made earlier in the week from another committee that they said, I think it's May 17th is the championship date. That's important because now FCS schools planning to play in the spring can back it up from there and figure out when to put their schedule. So I would assume within the next week or two, we'll start to see football schedules made. I don't know about the other sports that are going to be moved to the spring, but we should see football within, I would think, in the next week or two, now if that date gets approved.
Our weekly loyal listener, we have a few, a handful, but one David Winder believes that we will get inclination about college basketball before we get inclination about college football.
And we might. And I keep hearing all the rumors, and it's from multiple places. Bubble, 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 bubble. So that might be how we're going to end up playing. It looks like the general consensus, I haven't seen anybody really believe that we're going to be playing games before Thanksgiving.
Right. Yeah.
I've seen it mentioned as a possibility that we might. I just can't see that.
Yeah. Going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out.
It will. Yes.
2020. A slight digression here. 2020 continues to be a little bit of a tough season. We, of course, have seen the passing of John Thompson, Cliff Robinson, the former Portland Trailblazer. And then Wednesday night, it was announced that Tom Terrific, Tom Seaver, 75 years old, former Cincinnati Red, New York Met, so on and so forth, the great pitcher himself, who I happen to have, lucky enough to have one really nice baseball card of, passed away due to, I believe, dementia. And did they also mention COVID complications?
Yeah, COVID complications. But, I mean, he was in poor health anyway. And if you're in poor health and get COVID, that's really bad.
Yeah. Tom Seaver. Man, like, I mean, obviously this is before my time. You know, I mean, he had retired by the time I was born in 85. But what an ace. You growing up, during the time of Tom Seaver and so many other terrific pitchers. What do you remember most? Is it the Mets or is it his time with the Reds?
No, it's the Mets because the Mets were kind of a toy when I grew up because they were expansion team in 64. They were terrible. Yeah. They were just absolutely awful.
That's what expansion teams
do. But their
do.
Fans didn't care. They had National League Baseball in their city. They were okay with it.
Yeah.
They're cool. Okay. They're not good, but they're our team. They suck.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 5 years later, they're playing pretty decent ball. That 69, I don't know if you know this, but that's when baseball first went to divisions.
Right.
That was the first year that we had divisional play. It had been everybody, American League, National League, just in one standings. So for the Mets, they were in the East Division, and they managed to win that. And then Tom Seaver was fantastic. As I see, he went 25-7 that year. Jerry Kuzman was their other big pitcher for that team. He was a left-hander. And they had a guy that pitched out of the bullpen, a young dude by the name of Nolan Ryan. Just a little bit. Didn't pitch a ton, but they said he threw fast, kind of wild, but he did make at least an impact. But I remember that 69 team with Seaver on it. The greatest catch I've ever seen in a World Series was made by Ron Swoboda. Line drive hit to right field, bases loaded. This was going to unload the bases. Swoboda with a headlong drive, catches it just before it hits the ground on a dive. Just unbelievable. Tommy Agee played on that team. He was a center fielder. He was fantastic. Walt Weiss, later to be called Walt Three Blind Weiss by Chris Berman.
That's terrific.
He was on the team as well. They were just good enough. Singleton, I think, played first base. Ken Singleton, I think, and they were just a miracle. Had to beat the Baltimore Orioles. It was a team that was a few years down the road. I think we looked that up in 71, had 420 game winners and just missed having four this season. It was supposed to be a rout.
It was supposed to be.
That's nice. The Mets, they made it to the World Series.
Good for them.
Enjoy it because you're going to get pounded.
Right.
It'll be a sweep. Well, it wasn't a sweep because the Mets lost the first game. And then won the next four. They won that in five games. It was the most, you know, that's why sports is amazing, and that's why they were called the Amazing Mets.
Yeah, so not only were they the Amazing Mets, but you think about who was on that Baltimore Orioles squad. You had Jim Palmer. You had Frank Robinson. You had Brooks Robinson.
Yeah.
I mean, you had star power. 230 home run hitters in the lineup, which was kind of unheard of in the late 60s.
Yeah, because as a dominating pitching, the mound was 6 inches higher, and they eventually lowered the mound because people like Bob Gibson and Tom Seaver
killed it.
They were ruining it because they couldn't get any runs anymore.
Yeah,
so they lowered the mound, and the offense kind of came back a bit.
It's just unbelievable to think about how deep that Baltimore Orioles squad was. And it was a bunch of, I don't even want to say a bunch of nobodies, because it wasn't a bunch of nobodies,
right.
But it was the Mets,
yeah.
You know, an expansion team with an ace pitcher in Tom Seaver, who made everybody a believer. So
yeah
that rhymed on purpose, by the way.
But they were, you ask about remembering, I realize he pitched for the Reds, and I think pitched the White Sox,
yeah.
And the Red Sox, I think, one season. But my time, he's always going to be a Met to me just because I remember that team. I was really rooting for him. None of my teams were in the World Series. I thought, wouldn't it be cool to watch the Mets win this thing? And they did. And that was back when the World Series was played in the daytime. And if we were good boys and girls, we got to watch it in school. But you had to be good.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And, man, you enforced.
Neil.
You talk about boys and girls enforcing. You shut up. You shut up over there. Do not talk and interrupt Mr. Thompson's class so we can watch the World Series.
Oh, my gosh. The yeah. World Series during the day? Well, because you didn't have night games.
Yeah.
Mm. That sounds awesome, though. Could you imagine midday baseball? Right? Well, we have midday baseball yeah. now because we have doubleheaders.
But there are no World Series games.
But
in the
worlds, there's no World Series at day.
No.
Oh, my gosh.
Not even the weekend games are day games.
Could we just recognize that
yeah.
at all?
Yeah.
Oh, that would be amazing if we actually had some daytime baseball right now.
But
with that on
because
the line.
Of prime time.
Yeah.
You know, they want the prime time sponsors playing the prime time, paying the prime time ad rate. And so that's the reason they've been moved tonight.
Mm.
So there's what I remember from Tom Seaver, one of the most surprising teams ever with the Miracle Mets.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Seaver pitched for the Reds from 77 to 82. He's in their Hall of Fame. Six seasons. He went 75-46 with a 3.18 ERA and 158 starts. He also finished second in the National League Cy Young in 81 and fourth in 79. So he was excellent for the Reds, too. That's how I know him, because I'm a big Reds fan, so I've always gone back and, like, looked. I mean, I don't know him. I mean, I was not born
right
in, you know, any of those times. Any of the this mystical pre-1985, I don't know what is, but, and hell, I barely know what the 85 to 90 is. I was but a wee lad at that point, but, you know, I always knew in Reds history Tom Seaver was one of the greater pitchers. In the late 70s and early 80s to be a part of, you know, that organization. And so, you know, I've read a lot of baseball history, and I just know he was one of the greats, and he'll certainly be missed.
Certainly will be. But one of my favorite teams, and I really like Tom, but that 69 series team was really good.
Well, that's what stories are all about. I mean, that's exactly what sports is all about. You've already mentioned it, but you're exactly right. That is exactly how we're supposed to remember sports and why we love the game. And that leads me to my last point here. The KDE in the state of Kentucky did its due diligence last Friday and voted 10-0 to continue its recommendations and its, you know, to make sure that there's still compliance for the KHSAA to meet the health and safety guidelines of high school athletics in the state of Kentucky.
I think that was just a CYA meeting.
Yeah, sure.
In my opinion, they wanted to be sure that all the questions were asked that were supposed to be, and they were.
Yeah.
And I don't have any problem with that. They need to have answers from the people. And Julian Tackett was amazing. I thought he's very well prepared, did a good job taking them through the timeline. I think this is one of his most shining years, at least to this point, just to try to get the schools to the point where they can play fall sports. And unless something happens between now and next week, and I don't see that happening, we'll have it. And the way that it works, I think, is sort of like if you have a good week, everybody statewide for the most part, then we'll have another week of games. And if you have another good week, we'll play some more the next week. It's the way that's going to be. If it goes south big time, bump, that's the end.
And look, that's the best. If this is the best that we can do, this is giving everybody the opportunity and the chance.
Yes.
I think there's good leadership in place across the state. And here's the one thing that I will say. No coach, or player for that matter, wants to be the one responsible for an outbreak.
Exactly.
I hope that's the mentality.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to look at the other person and be like, man, I was the one that totally did this.
Right.
What do you think? Like, nobody wants to be that team. Nobody wants to be that player. Nobody wants to be that game.
Yeah.
You know, who wants to be that headline? Well, you know, here at sectionals, we had a pool party, and then, you know, like 40 people got it. Like, nobody wants to have that situation. The people, 12,000 people called the KDE prior to their meeting on that Friday. 12,000 people rang their offices saying, we want sports. Okay, well, if this is how bad you want sports, then do your part. I don't mean to make it sound so militaristic, but this is the 1940s, and we need Rosie the Riveter. Like, we need, you know, Mark the Masker. Like, it's just, no, like, just do your job. Like, just wash your hands, keep your distance, don't be an idiot, don't swap forks, you know, don't, like, have, like, 4-inch conversations with each other without a mask on.
And
like,
wear the masks as required.
As required, exactly.
And that's what they ask you to do. If you do those things, it should be at least good enough that we have sports. I'm still not convinced that masks stop all of it, but they seem to help. So what you're trying to do is, I think right now,
limit.
Keep it under 5% in terms of infection rate.
Limit it.
And I think you'll be able to play.
Yeah, I agree.
But they haven't ever said, if it gets to this, you can't. But I think as long as it's under 5, that's a manageable amount. And as long as you don't have massive outbreaks. The question, and I ask you this, and I don't really know the answer. Someone maybe could give it to us. If Joey Jones tests positive for COVID 2 days after a football game, does the football team get quarantined? Does he get quarantined? How does it work? I don't know the answer to that.
It's a great question, and one that I plan to ask fairly soon.
But you need to know the answer.
Teams. Yeah.
You
have to know going into Monday.
Yeah.
Labor Day is the beginning of sports. Some teams have opted not to start until September 8th. You know,
right.
They're going to observe Labor Day. But there are several local teams that are going to be playing on Monday afternoon.
Right.
We'll see. It'll be really interesting. I know for me personally, from a media perspective, I'm going to be wearing my mask at all times. Whenever I'm interviewing people, I'll be I'll be wearing my mask. I used to shake hands with every single player and coach after
yeah,
I talked to
them. Yeah, that's tough. To get used to not doing.
It's going
to
be me in the elbow bump.
Very tough.
For a while, you know probably
Air 5 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Or even maybe, you know, maybe I'll wear a hat and a tip of the cap or something. Like, I hate that. Win or lose, I have always been a handshaker.
I'm same way. Yeah, me too.
I'm a handshaking guy, but I also don't want to cross the boundary and there be an issue, you know. So I've already been given, you know, and I need to print it out. It's a multi bulleted list of things that media will be expected to observe whenever they're covering, you know, high school football, basketball, baseball, soccer for most of this season, if not all of it, I would think, unless there's just some dramatic downturn, you know, in the early spring months.
Right.
I see myself having to observe some stricter guidelines, and I fully expect that. But it'll be different this year for sure. And we've got to start on Monday. And we'll see how it all plays out.
And it is odd. We're closing the end. It is your show, so if you want to do 4 hours, that's up to you.
Let's do it.
But we're close to the end. And we haven't even discussed the Kentucky Derby because there's no fans going to be there.
Not at all.
It's almost like it's not going on.
Yeah, I want to give a quick shout out. The Lexington Herald Leader and the Courier Journal will both be doing extensive coverage. My really good friend, one of my best friends, Ryan Hermans, will be one of the four or five photographers and videographers that will be that is privy to the Kentucky Derby this year, which is unique all on its own in regards to this. He spent a week here last week as part of his vacation because he just likes Western Kentucky, and I guess he wanted to hang out with me for some strange reason. But he and I talked a long time about just the expectations and how they're going to cover the Kentucky Derby. Mm-hmm. Because you have to think about it from this perspective, Neil. This is a race that's run for 130 years. Typically with a large infield and a large crowd, typically.
You're right.
Except like maybe some of the earlier years where it was just like, hey, the infancy of the race. It's always been like this big to-do. Like internationally, like the Queen has been, Tom Brady. People have shown up to this race that, you know, like you don't see in Kentucky on a regular basis.
Yeah.
There's going to be no one there.
I know.
With people outside protesting everything else, because it's, a perfect time to protest. Who knows? The race will run with just the horses and the jockeys. That's, in a way, that's almost its purest form.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, if you're racing horses, the only thing driving you is the horse beside you, behind you, and next to you.
Yeah, but it's going to be weird because
it'll be weird.
Down the stretch they come, and all you hear is sort of like being at Ellis Park.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There's hardly no fans.
Right.
But even then, there's a few fans going, come on.
Come on, I got $20 on this game. Let's go.
That's right.
But, like, the crazy thing about it, Neil, is that, and this is the one thing that Ryan and I talked about from a photography perspective, there is a chance for this derby to be spectacularly photographed.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to have full access, not in the sense of, like, full access where I can just go where I want and shoot photos, but full access in the sense that you're not going to have people bothering you as you're trying to take photos, and
sure,
you can get this from so many different angles.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that the Lexington Herald Leader has multiple remotes that will be set up all over the racetrack. They're going to get all kinds of different stuff. It's not much different than your typical annual coverage that you get from a photography and videography perspective, but they're just not going to be as clustered because there's no one there.
No one will get in front of the lens accidentally.
You're not.
Because there isn't anybody.
Yeah, you're not going to have any sort of like chaos in that regard.
Right.
They're going to have a little bit more, it's different access, but it's access nonetheless. Mm-hmm. Because we're going to be able to see images, I think, personally. And we'll know by this weekend, but we will be able to see images of the Kentucky Derby that we may have never imagined in our lifetimes.
Mm.
So I'm really excited about that, really excited for Ryan Hermans and the staff of both the CJ and the Lexington Herald Leader. I know that it's, you know, it's a different situation. It's unfortunate. It's not the way you wanted to cover the Derby, but we're getting to have it, you know, and it apparently 'tis the law seems to be the ultimate favorite, not just for the Derby, but there's talk of a Triple Crown. So that definitely gets some excitement going moving into the fall sports scene. But, you know, we'll see. That's this weekend. But you're right. We barely even talk about it because
normally I've got my winner picked out and stuff. I haven't even looked at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know 'tis the law. Then the other really good horse opted out. So,
yeah.
I don't I don't know.
Well, there's already talk, though, that the who was it that opted out?
I don't even remember.
Well, there's talk that that horse can win the other two legs.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I heard. And just opted out for this race.
That's the push. Yeah, I think it was a mild foot injury earlier this week, so, and pulled out. But, yeah, I'm looking forward more than anything. We'll have the coverage, obviously, in the Paducah Sun, but I'm looking forward to, more than anything, some of the photography that can come from this situation because of the access you have available. So
it'll be fun.
Neil. It's been fun.
Yep.
It's
I'm not real. In Atlanta. Glad that I got to do a show, but I'd rather be in Atlanta doing a football game.
I would too, actually. You know, it is crazy to think you would have been in Atlanta when the NBA announced Rookie of the Year.
What I missed, because I'd have been in the van with Dave 10 hours, I would have got to hear his RBI story one more time.
Yeah.
I missed that. I don't recall exactly how many RBIs it is, but hopefully I can get that for basketball season.
Somewhere around 11, I think, right?
11, 12, 13. I'm not sure, but I'll have to wait till basketball and I'll let you know.
That sounds good. All right. As always.
All right. Thank you, Ed.